Log Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is the Mud Toe Sasquatch radio program. Formally, as in a formal manner, called Mud Toe at Midnight. I'm your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. Thank you for joining me this evening here on the With Insights channel of Blog Talk Radio. Unfortunately, must open with an apology. Those of you who were here for the show last week will be able to report that there wasn't one, and I'll tell you exactly what happened. I've been getting up at 5 in the morning to make this move happen. I've been working on it all day and drove to my parents' house. Got here at about 9:30 p.m., and said, so I'll just close my eyes for just a second, and it was the next morning. So that's how these things happen sometimes. And we think, I'll speak for myself, I think that I can drive my body to do certain things, and then it just doesn't happen. And you have my deepest apologies if you did come, if you did come here last week and nothing was going on in this space. I was snoozing quite happily, I can assure you, and might have been doing so this week, except that I set the alarm on my cell phone, and it didn't have to wake me up, but it almost did. I, of course, sort of snapped out of a nice little reverie. I'd set the cell phone for 11:45, and at 11:44, I kind of snapped awake, which is actually a superpower that I have. I always tend to wake up just before my alarm clock goes off, so that I'm spared the shock of being awakened by my alarm clock. And that actually didn't happen one day earlier this week. I was actually woken up by my alarm clock, which is very, I find to be very jarring, and it kind of sets a, how do I want to say this? It's a sort of poor start for my day. I hate to put that much of a negative spin on it, but I mean, it's something I think about quite a lot, at least during the morning, is having been sort of figuratively shaken out of my sleep seems to impact what happens for the rest of the day. Certainly, thankfully, I do not have to deal with that today, although I am still quite tired for reasons that I will explain as the show unfolds. Because I'm just searching for things to talk about, again, for reasons that will become obvious as the show unfolds. I am here, though. This is Mud Toe at Midnight, and I have no... There are no plans for that to change. The show will be here for as long as the audience and my friend and boss, the Chief Hoop Watcher, will allow it to be so. So there you go. I'm just looking right now. I have my walking stick that the Chief Hoop Watcher made for me. An exquisite piece of work, and many thanks to him for that. I don't know if I had it yet. The last time I remember so little, that seems so long ago, the last show I did, because I was still in my apartment the last time, my old apartment the last time I spoke to you. I would have had to have had it by then, but we kind of settled in together. I've given the walking stick a name. It's actually just sort of, it came to me. I don't know whether it was the stick that gave me its name or whether someone else gave me the name. But the name came to me that the name was Winnetou, and I knew that there was some familiarity to that name. I meant that the name was familiar to me. Don't flower it up, Todd. I used my real name. I've revealed myself before my public. No, I knew the name came to me, Winnetou, but it seemed to me that I knew that name somehow, but I couldn't place it. And it turns out it's the name of a character from fiction, from a series of books by Carl May. And I'm familiar with it because it was referenced by Quentin Tarantino in the movie Inglourious Basterds. It's a German author writing about a Native American. Written a lot about a Native American because there are several books. So like 200 million copies sold or something like that, which was at the time the books were written was a serious, serious number. Like the 1880s or something like that. But anyway, that was the name that came to me, and that's the name that will stick. I haven't spoken to you for 2 weeks. In that time, I've left my apartment in my city in the Midwest, where I've lived for the apartment I've lived for almost 5 years. I've figured it is the longest that I have ever lived in one place since I've been an adult. So say 4 years, 10 and a half months is how it ended up. I didn't quite make it to 5 years. That reminds me, just one of these things. I got to the move was accomplished sort of on July the 31st. Let me not get ahead of myself. While I was doing, I'm doing most of this by myself. And it's not that I have all that much stuff. But you find out when you start moving just how much stuff you have. It's always many times more than you think. I'll speak for myself. It was many times more than I thought it was going to be. And so I became involved in this process of progressively winnowing down the amount of my possessions and bags of garbage being produced as a result. And, you know, I hate that. I hate producing all that sort of waste. It makes me feel, as if I've committed a crime against the Earth Mother, you know, sending all the stuff into her, stuff that belonged to me. So I couldn't find another home for, excuse me. So doing that, and then at the same time I was engaged in this jury duty that I had been called for. And I went, I'm getting up at, very early in the morning so I can go to jury duty, and then coming home at night and working on getting my apartment ready for a move. And as you can imagine, that didn't work out too well. I wanted to when I got home from jury duty because it was a long day. Well, let me tell the story. I got there on a Monday, and they brought us in early. Had to be there at 8 o'clock. A group of about 100 people, and they sat us down, did our orientation, taught us what it was to be a juror. And the other end said, it's important to be a juror. We love you. And then another person got up and said the same thing. And then they showed us a video, which basically said the same thing. And then a judge came in and told us the same thing. That process took, and then there was some paperwork to fill out. And that whole process took like an hour and a half. And they said, okay, go and take a break. And they had this big room there for the jurors. Excuse me, that we would go, you'd go back and use their computers, or they had some games, and they had books, and just a big open space where you could hang out, and there was a kitchen. And it was a pretty nice, setup for people. But the idea is that's where you wait until someone calls you to be on a jury. And you would go and in small groups, and they would you'd participate in a thing called a voir dire, V-O-I-R-D-I-R-E, voir dire, which is it's a process, you've probably seen it on television, where they the the attorney asks you some questions to see if you would be a good juror for their point of view. And the plaintiff or the prosecution, depending on whether it's plaintiff is a civil trial, prosecution if it's a criminal trial. And then the defense have to agree on who the good jurors would be. And then you start, you see on, you know, on Perry Mason or whatever, on the various legal shows, how they do the voir dire and bring people in one by one to ask them the questions. And then the attorney will challenge them, you know. If you get challenged, then you don't get to be a juror in that case, and you go back down to the big room and the games and the computer and all that and wait to be called again. So after they did orientation, as I said, they sent us off on a break. And I came back from the break, and they started calling names, and my name was on this list of people they were calling, like literally minutes after coming back from break. It was a large group of people, about 30 people, and they sent us all upstairs, and they apologized for the fact that this whole process was going to be so weird, because it was weird for them, because they didn't normally have groups of people this large. So that's setting off some red flags. Oh dear, this is an unusual process, what's happening. It's unusual even for them. Obviously, it's unusual for me, because I've never done it before. It's, the voir dire takes the rest of the day. And we're sitting up and, standing up and sitting down and getting lined up in they give us an order to line up in and then sit down and stand up. It's just this terrible process of kind of hurry up and wait that lasts all day. And there was no sort of, privacy or dignity to it. As I said, in the TV show, you see the people coming in one by one to answer these sometimes very personal questions by which the attorneys determine whether you would be a good juror for them or not. But they didn't, in our case, they didn't do that. They just did it with everybody at once. You know, it's all sitting there. And they said, if you're embarrassed about something, you can ask the judge if you want to, if you can just tell him. But in a way, that would be almost more embarrassing to go and call attention to yourself in that way. For me, that's what I'm thinking, that to call attention to myself in that way by going and having to the judge, okay, this is like, I can't share this piece of my life with everyone else. I'm just going to share it with the judge. So we plodded through it in this case. And again, I can't tell you about the case because it's still ongoing. But I'll tell you that there were five different attorneys involved. So this is a very, very involved, very time-consuming process. With five attorneys involved. So we get done. It takes the whole day. We get done. They send us home. I said, okay, can you come back tomorrow morning? We'll tell you who's on the jury or not. And I was pretty confident, having shared some hints of my spirituality, that I had proven I was different enough that they didn't want me on this jury. I didn't tell you. They had said during the voir dire that the trial was going to last 2 or 3 weeks. And they hadn't prepared us for that in the orientation. They said, maybe you won't get picked to trial at all. And even if you are picked, it'll probably be, a day or two and that's it. And maybe you can only have to serve in one trial. If you get picked right away and you only have to serve for a couple of days, that's it. You can go home. Yippee-ki-yay. But, now not only am I not going home early, I'm going to be here, longer than the original proposed term of service was 1 week. And I'm going to be here for at least 2, maybe 3. Now, it wasn't as bad for me, of course, obviously, because I don't have any plans, except that I was trying to move, which I didn't, at very first, naively, I didn't expect that was going to be any sort of problem, but obviously it turned out that it was. Maybe not, obviously, I don't think I've told you that part. I'd be a juror, get up early, go downtown, and be a juror, and then come back and have to motivate myself somehow to get my apartment cleaned out. And it didn't work out very well. I didn't get it cleaned out very well. There's still furniture in it. I didn't get the bathroom cleaned. I didn't get the kitchen cleaned the way I wanted it. I was very embarrassed to finally turn in my key because I know there's work, a lot of work to be done. I've been too embarrassed even to ask about the fate of my deposit because I'm quite sure it's going to be absorbed in their cleaning costs. And then, to add insult to injury, I left the walking stick behind. It's like this wonderful, beautiful walking stick that Iggy made for me by hand. And I had stuck it into the closet. I didn't normally keep it in the closet. But I had stuck it in there because, you know, so much stuff going on, furniture being moved, stuff being moved. I didn't want it to be, you know, knocked down or broken or harmed in some way. And, so I stuck it in the closet and forgot that it was there. And I forgot to take it with me. So I called up. I called up my former landlord, and I told him what the situation was. And he said, "Yes, you'll come over and get it." So I did. And then this is that day that I was on my way home. That Friday, I was on my way home to my parents. And so I got here at 9:30 and decided to take a little nap. And it didn't end up being a little nap. It ended up being the whole night, and I missed the show and all that. So now we've come full circle back to, full circle back to 1 week ago anyway. And I'm back here trying to keep my voice down because my parents are both been coughing all night. I'm sure they're still awake. So you're dying for sleep because I was up at 5:30 this morning because I've been staying with my parents during the weekend and then on the weekdays, I stay with my daughter, and then I'm able from her place to drive my car to the park and ride, the place where you can park your car and then pick up the bus and take it into the city. And that process all takes so much time. I'm usually up out of bed at I have my alarm, actually my cell phone alarm, set for 6 in the morning, and usually I'm up more like 5:30. Up in the bathroom and getting my morning business done. So it's a long day. It's a long, long, long day, and I've been up today. I've been up just like last week when I was comatose at this time. Today I have been up since about 5:30 this morning. And folks, I am certainly feeling it. I am 100% feeling it right now, and I'm fighting the urge to just abandon the show before it's over. I think, God, I gotta get to sleep. I'm sorry, but I know, I have no place I have to be in the morning. So once I'm done here, I can click the phone off and lay down and sink blissfully into oblivion for a while, at least for one morning or two. I don't think there's any place I have to be Sunday morning. I can live without having to haul myself out of bed that early. Now, again, I'm dying to tell you more about the trial. But again, the trial is not over, so I'm not allowed to talk about what's actually going on within it. That will probably be next week's show. What I did forget to tell you is that Winnetou, the walking stick, is going to be the subject of my next blog entry, if I ever do manage to write it. Because I haven't been able to get access to the... They have the internet, as I said, at the jury room, but I can never get there because I'm always up working on the trial. And when I get home, I'm just too wrecked to try and do anything else. I just don't have the... It just astounds me that I, once was able to work a full-time job and then go out in the evenings and be in a play or something like that. I can only dream about having had that kind of energy. But the trial will be over soon. I heard the closing arguments this afternoon. Now, I'm an alternate, so I don't actually have to participate in the decision and I like that because it's a very, very difficult trial, which I will I will tell you more about next week. I can't imagine they'll be operating for a week. But I still have to be available in case something happens with one of the main jurors. So I have to go. So at least at this point, I will be able to hang out in the jury room. So I'm hoping that some progress will be made in the area of blog writing. I have an acute idea, I think, about the walking stick, which I've called the Rescue of Winnetou. Kind of a sort of title, maybe one of those original Carl May books might have had, Rescue of Winnetou. I haven't written it, but I have a pretty decent idea in my head about what it's going to be about. But as I say, I'm kind of draggy right now. And you know, it may not be a matter of consciously abandoning the show for tonight. I may just fall asleep on you. You'll have to... I'll actually be hung here for 12 minutes before there are however long it's left. Okay, I gotta keep talking, or this is just not gonna work. The other thing, oh God, this is hard. The other thing I want to talk about. I am living at my daughter's house, and I stayed there all week this week. And it's not terribly hard because she's not there very much. She works at the child care center of a fitness center, the gym. And they have a place where people can drop off their kids while they go gymming. And she works there. And a fun thing about that is she can take her daughter, my granddaughter, with her to work because it's a child care center. So she and my granddaughter are going there usually till later in the evening. And my daughter's husband, my son-in-law, he works until even later, like 10, 11 o'clock at night. So even though I don't get there usually till 6:37 at night, no, 6:30 or 7, not 6:37, usually there's nobody there, so I can decompress fairly effectively. Now, an exception to that was last night or the night before. Not last night, but the night before. I think it was the night before. Brenda came home with my granddaughter in tow, which was fun. And then a female coworker who was helping my daughter move. They're moving. They're getting ready to have an apartment, and they're moving into their first home here in a few weeks, which is very nice. But, you know, there's this sort of deconstruction process going on in their home, their apartment, reflecting the one that just went on in my apartment, and it's making me, it's uncomfortable to remember that, especially since there are some unfinished bits of business I've been having trouble motivating myself to get done. That furniture that's still there leads to mind. I say I have one person who's interested in looking at it, but I have to get the approval, obviously, of my ex-landlord, and I've been, for whatever reason, just not doing that. I need to call my insurance agent to tell him I don't live there anymore. It affects my auto and renter's insurance. And then, what's the other thing? Oh, about switching my, you know, switch my electric and my gas, or canceling my electric and gas service. And then I had a phone call from, a phone message from Iggy saying that I needed to transfer that to them rather than just cancel it. And I had known that. And I need to call him and let him know that that has happened, that I've canceled it, that I've stopped the electric service rather than transfer it. I haven't done that. It's just feeling like, you know, if you've seen The Godfather Part 3, I wouldn't recommend that you do if you haven't, but the famous song, the famous line of Al Pacino, every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. every time I think that this process, moving out of my apartment, is over with, you know, somebody calls me and oh, this one more piece of thing that you have to do, one more thing. And I'm like, no, it's done, it's over with. I don't want to revisit that anymore. And it's, no, I still have to take care of this. Tiring, and then, you know, being in my daughter's apartment while she's getting ready to move sort of reminds me of that. And anyway, she had come home with a female coworker who was going to help her with some stuff, and they were going to start off early the next morning, which meant that this female coworker was going to be spending the night where I was spending the night, and you know, I'm out in the living room. And she was going to be in with my granddaughter, and I developed an attraction for this young lady, and it was my feeling was it was going to be difficult for me to spend the night under the same roof with her, but you know, I had no alternative. I mean, I wasn't going to go out and sleep in my car, so it was an interesting, I won't say test. I didn't feel. I mean, I never felt that I was going to do anything inappropriate. But it was, I don't want to express this. You know, not that she had shown any, you know, I hadn't said anything to her and she didn't show any interest in me. It's not that there was any sort of encouragement or anything like that whatsoever. Just the fact of being, of knowing, of thinking if she's on the other side of that wall, you know. And those are the kind of thoughts that we would go through my mind when I was much younger. And we would have, you know, female guests in our house. I won't say frequent, what's the word I want? Well, anyway, when that would happen most often in our house was around Labor Day, which is approaching. And my father would have his friends that he served in the Army with. Their families would come. A couple of them that he was the closest to would come and stay at our house. And then that would be the day before Labor Day, and we usually go to an amusement park or something. And then the next day on Labor Day proper, the rest of the contingent would arrive. But then on that one day, you know, they all have the two guys who are his friends, you know, they both had daughters. And I would think about that. You know, when I would be sleeping on the living room floor while the guests were using the bedrooms. And you know, they're right, you know, right on the other side of the wall. I could just walk in there. And then what happened after that was not entirely clear, but I didn't have a plan. I wasn't ideating anything. That's very much that kind. How is that possible? I just got a 90-second warning. Have I actually? No, I'm going to go back on this recording and find out I was asleep through the first middle part of it. So when we get together next week, I'm going to tell you all about the trial, and then hopefully pick up on that thread I was just talking about that sort of loneliness is keyed by having an available person of the opposite sex who doesn't know you're alive. There's no reason that she should know that you're alive. But in a very close proximity. Or maybe I'll just forget about that. I don't know. But thank you for your attention. Thank you for being here. And I will endeavor to do better next time. And once more, accept my thanks. And have a good weekend.